take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Friday, September 11th, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. We're here for a special edition of the Russ Melville Show. I'm just bringing you a live introduction here to what is going to be a clip show. And of course, we're also all remembering the events of 14 years ago when we were attacked on September 11th, 2001. I was teaching PowerPoint in Boise, Idaho at the time, and I came into work. It was 7 a.m. Mountain Time when I was getting ready, but I don't watch TV when I'm getting ready for work, so I had no idea what was going on in New York. Got to work in Boise, and a couple of my coworkers were there huddled around a computer talking about some sort of plane accident in New York, but it didn't register that it was a big attack or anything at the time. There was just one plane that had hit, and I didn't hear them say jumbo jet. I just heard some plane. I thought maybe some, you know, Cessna or corporate jet or something had an accident. Went and taught the PowerPoint class, and we went off on first break about 10 a.m., and everybody just rushed out of the class. They'd been checking their phones the whole time. They rushed out of the class, and everybody in six or seven different classes was all gathered into one room where we had a TV set up. And that's when I first learned some, I don't know, 4 hours after the event had happened, that we were under attack, and it was a terrorist incident. And every other class got dismissed that day and sent home. People were crying and distraught, as they should be, except my class. Everybody who had come to my class were state workers who'd come from various, actually, I think they were federal workers who'd come from various places around the like three-state region. They'd all been flown in and paid for hotels, and there was no way they were going to be able to reschedule in time, and they needed the training for some, I forget what they needed it for, but long story short is I had to teach the rest of the day on September 11th to a class full of people who could have cared less about what I was teaching. It was a day I will never forget, and you probably won't either. Anyway, on today's show, I mentioned it's a special show. We're doing a clip show to celebrate the Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference. That's taking place this weekend. In fact, I'm headed there in about a half an hour to get set up. That's partially why we can't do the live show today. But we're going to bring you some highlights of speakers who will be at the Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference this weekend. Some of their past clips that I've recorded over the years. We're going to start things off with Oregon State Senator Floyd Prezanski. Oh, I'm sorry. We're going to start off with Earl Blumenauer. My U.S. Congressman Earl Blumenauer speaking at the 2009 Normal National Conference, then followed by Oregon State Senator Floyd Prezanski at the 2015 OMMBC. We've got Sid Maurer, the Eugene TV anchor, and we will have Alex Rogers and Anthony Johnson. So stay tuned. Earl Blumenauer is up now.
My congressman, my very own Earl Blumenauer.
The award we're giving Representative Blumenauer, I'm just going to read it. Many of you, particularly if you've been around for more than 20 years, you'll remember this individual who the award is named after. And maybe Congress Blumenauer knows his son because he's a prominent D.C. citizen and used to head the D.C. court system. The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws is pleased to present the Rufus King Senior Award for Outstanding Public Leadership in the Field of Marijuana Law Reform, U.S. Representative Earl Blumenauer.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to join with you. I heard Steve's comments about your being over the top, and I think I know what he meant about that. But let me say that actually much of what I would have shared has already been said. But there was a famous Washingtonian, the late Mo Udall, who said in a similar situation as he stood up to say, you know, the good news for you is that everything that needs to be said has been said. The bad news is not that everybody has yet said it. And I do want to take a moment to walk through some of my perceptions on this issue, my concerns. But I will tell you, as compelling as I think the presentations that you've heard, with all due respect, they don't match up to a speech that I heard 37 years ago on the floor of the House of Representatives in Oregon by a 65, 66-year-old pig farmer from Hermiston, Oregon, named Stafford Hansel. And I will tell you, that had a profound effect on me. I was a child legislator at the time, much smarter than I am today, deeply involved with a whole host of issues, and this wasn't one of them. I may have had a slightly sheltered college experience, but I had never smoked marijuana or been involved with illegal drugs. Still haven't. But I will tell you, listening to this gentleman, straight as an arrow, I mean, he didn't smoke tobacco, didn't drink alcohol. I don't think he smoked, drank coffee. But Stafford was a man of inordinate common sense and intellect. He said, you got that way, raising lots of pigs, trying to make a living as a farmer and a part-time conservative legislator in an interesting state. Stafford went through a presentation that began with cigarettes, and he described in great detail the damage to our society with this gateway drug. He talked about coffee. He put a bottle of booze on his desk and talked about Demon Rum. And then he took out a little baggie, kind of waved it, and went through what at the time was the best information he had, but suggested that in terms of the physical harm, the addictive capacity, the damage to society, that it didn't match up. And Stafford called on the legislature to legalize, I think it's two plants for personal consumption. When he was finished, you could have heard the proverbial pin drop. And on that day, he secured 20 votes. And I am told by those much more knowledgeable than I that if the people who smoked marijuana but voted no had joined the 20 of us who voted yes, it probably would have passed by a 2-to-1 margin. That legislature, we did decriminalize marijuana in Oregon and started, we'd like to think, part of an Oregon tradition where we don't always have the same take on issues as the rest of America. And we welcome you here in your efforts to make great plans and think great thoughts. I appreciate George referenced the magnificent Columbia River Gorge. This is the bike capital, the streetcar capital. There are more breweries in Portland, Oregon, than any city in the world. used responsibly, that drug can have a social lubricating effect, and the pubs are great places to visit. Well, we invite you to be part of an opportunity for us to think about some public policies differently. We are in the midst of a political climate unlike any that I've ever seen, as we have people out there who are protesting taxation with representation. People who are upset about a political process they don't think is open enough, but they're trying to shut down debate. There are folks that are inhabiting their own fact-free zone. Well, I've been involved in the political process, as I admitted, for a long time. But I've never seen a convergence of international and national events, the economy, the personal emotions, the threat to the future of the planet, like we see now. But I think it is important for you to continue this debate, carrying forward your policy initiatives, because there is a potential here for you to actually reach across party lines, philosophical divides, to be able to engage people in a different type of discussion. Now, in the House, we run for election every 2 years. I'm running again. I'm opposed by a libertarian, a green. There may be somebody else in there from a Constitution Party. There's a Republican. There's a Tea Party influence. But we were thinking, coming over here, that actually the decriminalization of marijuana may be something that all the candidates agree on. Just maybe. And regardless of what people's opinions are now on marijuana and drug policy, I would suggest that it is the perfect time to reassess those policies, to be able to understand where we are, how we got there, and to reappraise the longest war in American history. We're told about half the adult population has tried marijuana, that there are millions of people who use it regularly. There have been incalculable sums of money that has been invested, and there have been, candidly, some very corrosive effects of this struggle. The reference of some very casual users having their lives turned upside down. We have, because of, I would argue, because of some of these policies that we haven't gotten right, we have enriched some very corrupt and corrupting people. We have a country on our southern border, Mexico, that is teetering on being a failed state. And I think we can trace some of the impact of money from illegal marijuana operations, vast sums of money, that has contributed to that teetering. It has raised serious questions about how we prioritize our own activities in this country. It has, I would be prepared to argue, even on the behalf of people who do not favor decriminalization of marijuana, I think there is little argument that it has skewed our law enforcement priorities to the detriment of community safety. Even if you don't think it should be legalized, it's hard to argue that point. And when we think about hundreds of thousands of people who've been jailed and imprisoned. Think about the pressures on our correction system, the inability of correction systems to deal meaningfully with people in terms of rehabilitation, much less just deal with the making the institutions safe for people to be in and to work in. You've got to question that prioritization. And you are right to do so. But it is not just the costs. I think it is important for you to help people think about the lost opportunities. Think about the consequences of enriching some of the worst people on the planet, the lost opportunities to help people with serious drug problems and addiction problems that, were we deploying our resources differently, we could be able to save lives and be able to enrich not just their lives, but society as well. I appreciate the reference to prohibition. I hope everybody here has read Okrent's The Rise and Fall, was it The Last Call? The Rise and Fall of Prohibition. I think every policymaker should be required to read it twice. It talks about how minority interest in politics were able to lever national policy. It describes in great detail the compromises that were necessary to get even this prohibition through. And it details great fortunes made, criminal syndicates created and empowered, and making law breakers out of millions of Americans. It's a sobering account, and it is something that should be part of the discussion going forward today. You are joining at a time of amazing foment. Reference was made to the war in Iraq, which we will be recovering from for at least two generations. We went right up to the brink economically as the geniuses on Wall Street just about drove us over a cliff, taking away some $17 trillion of wealth, average Americans, pension funds, and turning dreams and aspirations upside down. And people are upset, and they should be. They're frustrated. Worst wildfires in Boulder, Colorado's history. Last month it was 102 degrees in Moscow. Extreme weather events. We were slowly cooking the planet. I mean, go through the litany of issues that you are competing with. But I will say that you ought to claim your place in line, because you are talking about the intersection of law enforcement, health, corrections, medicine. I'm so old, when I started in this business, being a chronic late-stage alcoholic made you a criminal. And we spent gazillions of dollars locking these people up. Well, we've shifted policies. We have recognized it as a disease of alcoholism, and we, in most communities, are allocating resources more thoughtfully, more humanely, to greater effect. You're at the intersection of a whole bunch of issues. And as I said, it's something that you can be building a bridge between Ron Paul and Barney Frank. Okay? with some of the Tea Party people and folks that were out there having a counter rally. And you can do so in a way that is going to help advance an important national discussion. I don't know where it's going to end up. I suspect that probably in what... I think this is the decade of decision. All us geezer baby boomers are going to start, you know, claiming Social Security and Medicare and all these effects that we have been talking about for years in a whole host of areas are coming to a head. We're going to be making some decisions this decade because we will be forced to. I predict by the end of the decade, the issue of gay marriage, people are going to shrug and wonder, you know, what was the big deal? I suspect that doing your job right, engaging people in this debate, in this discussion, looking at the facts, trying to bring people together in a thoughtful, non-hysterical way, letting the evidence speak for itself. I suspect that this will be your decade of decision. I hope you do focus on Congress. I hope you make sure that, you know, it was, I thought, significant that before we adjourn, the Congress that has great difficulty agreeing on almost anything actually changed the penalties for the possession of crack cocaine to eliminate the vast disparity, particularly the impacts that it had on the African-American community. It was very interesting watching people on both sides of the aisle come together over that. I hope that before this Congress adjourns, that we deal with the passage of the Industrial Hemp Farming Act. You are here in the cradle of sustainability. And, you know, let's get real about industrial hemp, its applications, an agricultural product, dispelling the myths about its hallucinogenic properties. I'm proud to co-sponsor that legislation, the Medical Marijuana Patient Protection Act. I told Barney that I was going to sign on his bill right after he introduced it. We thought we were on it. Somebody checked yesterday, and we weren't listed on that. So we will make sure when we go back that we are. I think we are. I thought we were, but we'll make sure. But I hope that we will all leave here committed to engaging people in a constructive conversation about how we'll all be better off when we decriminalize marijuana, that we rationalize our policies, and that we're able to do so with civil, thoughtful political discourse. I think you can help us a lot in the months ahead, and look forward to working with you. Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Steve Vetran from Chula Vista, California, and you're listening to 420radio.org.
Hi, I'm Alex Rogers, producer of the 4th Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference, the OMMBC. There have been a lot of recent changes to Oregon cannabis laws. Recreational sales start October 1st, new licensing from the state, and changes to medical marijuana. Are you prepared? Join us at the downtown Portland Hilton September 12th and 13th with the industry's top cannabis business experts, political leaders, exhibitors, and nightly networking events. For more information, join us online or give us a call. The OMMBC. Be part of history.
Connect with 420radio.org through social media, on Twitter at 420radio.org, and our Facebook page at 420radio.org. Follow us and like us today. You'll be glad you did.
Imagine life without taxes. Let New Era Certified Public Accountants, NewEraCPAs.com, handle your cannabis 280E and tax strategy. Get your business prepared with New Era CPAs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. NewEraCPAs.com, with years of experience in the industry, we are one of the nation's leading accounting firms for growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies from Washington to California. NewEraCPAs.com.
For reasons. The last time I had the opportunity to speak at the conference, I pointed out that in 2009, my colleagues agreed with me to basically make marijuana a Schedule II drug in the state of Oregon. As you probably know, the federal government still has it scheduled as a Schedule I. I think it's imperative that we protect Oregon patients by maintaining the separate system with our calling out of having a Schedule II drug reference for marijuana instead of Schedule I. I believe it gives us a better footing if, for some reason, the federal government wanted to come in, that we will be able to protect the program because we, as citizens of this state, understood back in 1998 and what we've seen over this last 15 years that medical marijuana does have medical principles that does, in fact, help many individuals. I'll share one story with you. Sitting as the chair of the Judiciary Committee during this last full session, we had a couple of different vets that came in who were suffering from PTSD. And if you remember, we had not had that listed as one of the conditions for being able to get a medical marijuana card in the state until we passed this legislation. But the story they told me is that they could go to the military, they could get all the opiates they wanted, and they could just be weaned out or whacked out to the point where they couldn't get off their couch. They could not function, they could not provide for their families, but they said they were finding relief when they were able to have certain different strains of marijuana to address their anxieties. And today I'm hoping that those individuals are taking benefit of what we have done, because I feel that this is a way that we can make certain that individuals who do not need to have extreme hard narcotics that can in fact find relief through a plant should have that opportunity to do that. So that's one of the reasons I think it's important to keep these programs separate, so we can have the ability to defend it if we need to. Now let me tell you, there's going to be a lot of stuff going on, as you can imagine, depending on what side of the fence you're on as to, let's just start with growers. We have indoor growers, we have outdoor growers. And of course, from my perspective, we should be able to coexist. But at the same time, I know that because of the way outdoor growers grow, and they basically have one season to actually be able to plant, to harvest, and get their product, as compared to someone that's running an indoor, we need to look at the numbers that we have as to what the limitations are of the amount of quantity that an individual can have, and how we're going to allow that to be mainstreamed into the system and allow for them to be able to produce what's necessary for what would be for basically a year's length of time for use of that product. So we're taking on, we have probably at least four different work groups that are working on various components of the Measure 91 implementation language. Now, 91 does deal with recreational, but I will tell you, in that committee, everything that is dealing with marijuana is going through that committee. My Judiciary Committee has previously had a lot of subject matter control over controlled substances. We still do, but it does seem like a lot of the stuff that normally would be handled in my committee is now in the other committee, or at least being subsequently referred from my committee to that committee. And this is, again, to kind of make sure the T's are crossed, the I's are dotted, and that we're in sync as to what we need to do for both the recreational and the medical program. Now, one of the things that I have introduced as a separate bill, but I expect it will be part of a larger bill, is when we passed House Bill 3460, the medical marijuana facilities, it was an oversight, but what we did not realize, and it was totally unintended, is that if a school, looking at the distance, is 1,000 feet, if you have a place, a facility that is actually sited, and then if a school, for whatever reason, moved within 1,000 feet of that facility, under current law, that facility would have to shut its doors at the time of its next, I guess if it gets one renewal, then it would have to shut its doors. Now, clearly, we have never seen that happen to any business in this state, and I'd say probably around the country, where you would have a legitimate business that was open and doing everything right, following the rules, that they would be displaced because a school was placed within that 1,000-foot barrier. So we are going to be putting in what we call a grandfather clause, that will, in fact, that allow for these various facilities to maintain their business locations, and that they will not be forced to move and relocate from their existing facilities. So that's going to be one of the things that we'll be fixing. Again, these are, let's call them as unintended consequences. I also refer to these as the bill being a living document. It becomes a law, but as we actually are administering it, we realize there are some things that we didn't cover, or things that maybe we intended to cover a different way, but not having that outcome. So how do we actually take care of that? And that's what we're going to be doing now. So that is one concern I know a number of people had, and I want to ensure that that is going to be taken care of. Now, there's been other issues regarding labeling, packaging, and that's probably some stuff we can go in greater detail as to some of the questions. I do expect that what you're going to see is the committee has not made a decision on some of this, these pivotal points as to what type of product is going to be available on the recreational side versus what's available today in the medical. So we'll be working through that. I expect that you're going to see a emphasis on retail sales to have whatever edibles they are going to be allowed to be packaged in single dose that will be very bright line as to what they are, and not being, let's say, a value pack chocolate bar that has serrated for 12 different doses. You will not, from my perspective, see that in a retail outlet, where you may still see that in a medical outlet. Regarding high dose of edibles, I think that, again, that's something that will stay in the medical side, and there will be a question as to when you will see that available in retail. One of the things that I'm very conscious of is ensuring that while we are implementing this language, that we don't see some of the situations that occurred in Colorado, less to Washington State, but to Colorado, as to people who are very novice, never maybe have ever had the opportunity to indulge in cannabis for recreational purposes, and not understanding that when the package tells you this has a time delay, you should wait 35 minutes, 40 minutes before expecting anything, that they were trying to, let's say, get that high way before its time would actually manifest within the body. So I think we are going to see some opportunities here where we're going to try to play this out where it will be staggered in or phased in through this process, so we can ensure that people get the education. One of the other things I'll tell you that the legislature just recently did is provide OLCC $350,000 for education. We're going to start trying to get educational messaging out soon, so we can start preparing. As many of you know, 91 has its first implementation date, will be July 1 of this year. That is when individuals such as yourself and I would have the opportunity, if we chose to and were of age, to be able to possess marijuana for recreational use and purposes. So as that starts playing out, I expect that you're going to see some situations that we'll just have to, and not, we're going to try to anticipate today and put in whatever safeguards we can, maybe some general rulemaking that will allow OLCC to take other steps as necessary when we're not in session. Our session will end on, well, it has to end unless we extend it by supermajority vote, the 11th of July. And so basically we'll have the implementation under 91 start on July 1, and then 10 days, if we're not out by then, because I can tell you the President of the Senate wants us out before the end of June, then we will not have that opportunity to really to respond, because we probably won't know what actually is happening in that first week and a half to 2 weeks once legalization takes place. The next set of dates that are really important for Measure 91 is January 1 of next year, 2016. That is the date that OLCC will start accepting applications for the various licensing that's called for under 91. So that's going to be an opportunity for those individuals who want to get into the industry and the market will decide on how they're going to go forward and what licenses they want. There's no prohibition at this point that will allow individuals to have multiple licenses, meaning you can be a grower, you could be a processor, you could be a wholesaler, or you could be retail. Now, we're going to have another license category, and that's going to be for research. This is one of the areas that I'm very happy to hear that between OHSU, Oregon State University, as well as the University of Oregon, all three of those institutions would like to be able to start doing research. Of course, as you can understand, one of the concerns right now is because all of those universities do in fact get significant funding from the federal government. There's kind of like catch-22, because at this point, since the federal government has not recognized this on the overall to allow for those organizations, those entities that are receiving federal grant money, they're very hesitant in getting into the field. So we believe that once we establish a licensing process and we put it within the OLCC, we'll be much more in line with what the Cole memo says, and that we will be able to see a little bit more. We'll still be asking the federal government for a waiver, and that will be based on the licensing process and the oversight that the state's going to be doing. The waiver is necessary from, if I'm not mistaken, with DEA, that will allow for that type of use of cannabis and that type of research to go forward. Now, let's see. So let me tell you one other thing, then I'll open it up for questions. As I mentioned previously, I expect that you're going to see really two distinct systems. If you're familiar with Washington, I went up probably about a month ago and went to a couple of the different retail operations to see how they are working. And it was interesting between the three that I went into, how they were welcoming people, how they were establishing contact with their customers and others coming through the doors. And also the other issue as to explaining to us the tax. As many of you probably know, in Washington State, they have a tax system on marijuana for in the recreational arena that is three-tier, meaning it's at the local levels, city, county, as well as the state. And so it's reached a 40% markup on product. So 40%, as you can imagine, is not going to do anything as to impacting the drug cartels, the underground market. And so based on 91 having a $35 per ounce on the flowers, $10 on the leaves, and $5 on starts, we are going to do everything in our control to maintain those numbers. Now, you may see some change as to how the money will be distributed to allow for some of the money, as it was called for in the measure, to be distributed, allocated differently. But it's very, very important from my perspective, and my goal is to put the cartels out of business, is to have the lowest tax possible, and Oregon has that right now. There's no other state that's passed marijuana for recreational use that has a lower tax on it than we do. And so I believe we're in the best position of all of the states. That includes Colorado, Washington State, Alaska's closest to us, I believe there is $50 an ounce. And then D.C., I'm not even sure they actually established it. I think it's just that they have the right for simple possession, if I'm not mistaken. But the reality is we will be able to actually take on the drug cartels by maintaining a tax base that's lower, and that people will be much more willing to come into the recreational legitimate side of the business. And I'm hoping that we will also be able to entice that individuals who are in the market, or excuse me, in the production, growing and producing, will also be able to benefit under this process, because the cost for at the counter will not be as great. Now, I told you I was going to take questions, but just one other thing I'm going to tell you that we are looking at. Currently, the tax structure is set up that the taxes that is going to impose at the point of the grower. So when the grower is basically moving it out into the stream of commerce is where the tax is. Many of us have looked at that, and we think that's the wrong place to tax. We believe the tax should be actually at the point of sale of retail.
Yeah.
That's almost a given at this point. Both the co-chairs and I have spoken in some length on multiple issues. This is one that I think we're all in agreement. We think this is a much reasonable, sensible way of dealing with it. And we also are looking at, based on the potential for taxing of edibles and extracts, that we may be looking at that on a weight basis as well, based on THC. That's something that's kind of playing out right now. As you can imagine, for those who are into the production of extracts, from my perspective, I guess I should say, is that taxing at the point of the leaf as compared to the final product doesn't seem appropriate. It seems to me that we should be looking at having something across the board as it pertains to THC, and that way I think we can actually have a more vibrant process and be able to ensure that it's going to be fair across the board for those who are producing flower versus those who are making secondary products.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details. Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
Hi, my name is Sid. I'm 25 years old, I'm married, and I'm a University of Oregon graduate. I am a former local news anchor, reporter, and producer. I'm a runner, an animal lover, and a generally optimistic and bubbly person. And I enjoy using marijuana. If you're someone who immediately jumped to negative conclusions about my life, ask yourself, what do you really know about marijuana? Because I found those who are adamantly against marijuana usually don't know much about it. Furthermore, if you're against marijuana but you drink alcohol, ask yourself why. Alcohol kills millions of people each year. By comparison, marijuana is harmless, both for personal use and for society, because unlike alcohol, marijuana does not kill, it does not incite violence, and it does not lead to criminal acts. This is a public safety issue. We need to break down the negative social stigmas, the laws, and the misguided policies that are forcing people to choose alcohol over marijuana. Because driving people to drink is dangerous, it's hypocritical, and it just doesn't make sense. My marijuana use had never negatively impacted my life until recently, when I lost my job as a local news anchor. Like any other workday, I showed up completely sober. I was stressed, on my way to a live shot in rush hour traffic behind the wheel of a work car, and I accidentally tapped the bumper of the car in front of me. I was immediately forced to take a drug test to pee into a cup, and that was that. The decision to fire me didn't come from my immediate supervisors, who actually worked with me every day and told me that they wanted me to keep my job. That's because they knew me and they trusted me, just like they trusted my coworkers who used alcohol in their free time. No, the decision to fire me came from a corporate attorney who had never even met me. Marijuana might be legal in Oregon now and a handful of other states, but clearly we still have a long way to go. When you consider the facts, it is crazy to think that marijuana has ever been considered dangerous, but I think that it's at least partly due to a lack of exposure. We need more realistic examples of normal and responsible marijuana users. So here I am. Like many other stoners out there, I don't fit the lazy, stupid, loser stereotype. The only stereotype that I've been fighting in my life is being considered an overachieving goody-goody. I'm responsible, I'm educated, I'm a woman, and the vast majority of people who meet me would never in their wildest dreams assume that I use marijuana. But I do, I'm really tired of hiding it, and that is why I want people to take notice. I want to start a conversation. I want you to ask me anything. If you don't agree with me, please let me know why, because I want people to be informed, no longer misinformed. I truly believe that once people know the facts about marijuana, you're going to be just as confused as I am that we're even having this debate. That's what I want to draw attention to. If we're all adults and it's legal, why can't we choose to use THC or, you know, marijuana and have THC in our system in our free time? It just doesn't make sense, and we need to draw attention to that.
That's a really nice focus connected directly to your story. If you would actually tell the audience really quick a little bit about your story. This is the first time I'm meeting you, but I know that you're a Eugene media anchor who was fired. So go ahead and tell that story real quick.
Basically, it was corporate policy. I was filling in as a reporter that day, and I was in a minor fender bender. I tapped the bumper of the car in front of me, so I was forced immediately to take a drug test. And when I failed due to THC, even though my news director and assistant news director were fighting for me and all of my coworkers who worked with me every day and knew that I was, you know, completely sober and was a good employee, wanted me to keep my job, but then it came down to corporate policy, just deciding it's not worth the risk. She had THC in her system. You know, someone who did not know me in another state made the call to fire me. And I just, I was very frustrated, and it just, like I said, it didn't make sense to me, and the double standard there seemed very unfair, the can of bigotry and being discriminated against with the drug testing policy. So I want, even though it's completely legal, I feel what they did was morally wrong, and so I feel like we need to draw attention to this because, and yes, it's legal, but it's not fully legal.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio. The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey Wildwood Gold Tone and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear, and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
This is 420radio.org. Mark Twain once said that when there's a gold rush, it's a good time to be in the pick and shovel business. Today we look at the rapidly evolving markets in the marijuana green rush in our Canna Business Chronicles.
Welcome back, everybody, and we welcome back into the studio Alex Rogers from the Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference and the International Cannabis Business Conference. And you got another one? Is there just two now?
Just two conferences
so far. All right, great. And we got Anthony Johnson in here as well. How you doing, Anthony?
Hey, doing great. Thanks for having us in, Russ.
Oh, this is a good time. All right, so let's get the business out of the way. The Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference, which I had a gig pre-scheduled for, and that gig canceled, so now I'm in.
You're in.
I'm in. So scoot up a bit and tell folks when it is and what's happening.
It's first of all, thanks for having us on, Russ. It's always awesome to be here. It's September 12th, 13th at the downtown Portland Hilton, Saturday, Sunday, and it's going to be the fourth Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference, and wow. And we just think when we first started doing this, it was, it was almost a novel idea,
yeah.
And it was only a couple years ago, which is so funny how rapidly things have changed. In the cannabis industry and with cannabis politics in Oregon especially. And so here we are with the fourth. They've always been successful, and now here we are with the fourth one at the Hilton here downtown Portland, and the timing really couldn't be better. And our curriculum is really tailored to it's probably the grittiest curriculum we've ever had, because there's so much information that needs to be covered.
Here it is. It's like 28 pages I typed up of like what we need to know that's new in the law.
Right.
And if I came up with 28 pages, I know the experts you got are going to have much more to cover.
Right. I mean, in one way, we have only one track at the OMMBC. So we have to look at all that plethora of information and then not only funnel it down, but then we need to choose the best funnel it down, categorize it, I should say.
Yeah.
Okay. And we need to deem what's the most pertinent stuff that people need to know. What do people have to know about the law? What is so important that, you know, if you don't know this, you're going to be behind the game. And some of that's business stuff, and a lot of it's political stuff too. And of course, they're both interrelated.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're so with all that thing with all that. Information, we have the one track. It's so important that who we pick also, and that person. And so we've picked some of the best, the top industry folks in Oregon, and a few from California also that we think should come in. And we have a woman on cannabis and women in cannabis program. And so we have Dale Sky Jones and Debbie Goldsberry flying in, who are the two top female actors. Maybe
there you go. Yeah, judges agree.
Exactly.
Yes,
exactly. Ever of all time, almost so. So, but then we have them along doing panels alongside some of the rising stars, female stars in the cannabis industry in Oregon also. So, you know, but basically it's the grittiest conference we've ever had, in that we're going to tell people what's happened with medical, what's going on, what can we expect with rec rules and regs, and then how those two interchange and cross over, because it's convoluted even for the experts.
Well, yeah, this will be happening, you said, September 14th?
12th and 13th.
12th and 13th, so middle of September. Now, Anthony Johnson's here. He's with New Approach Oregon. He was instrumental in the Measure 91 campaign, and there was all these bills that passed at the end that got signed to change, you know, what we had voted on in Measure 91, and actually a lot of great surprises in there, like better than what we had anticipated. But that one, that 460, the one for October 1 sales, it's still not signed yet, is it?
It has not been signed.
Okay.
My sources close to the situation for the longest time have expected that Governor Kate Brown will let Senate Bill 460 go into law without her signature, which would happen after 30 days. And I had gotten word last Friday that there's signs showing that she may indeed sign it.
Oh, okay.
It really doesn't matter whether she signs it or not. I mean, I think it'd be better if she would sign it, and people could stop worrying about whether it's going to happen or not, and can start planning. The Oregon Health Authority can start getting to work on the rules to make it done, you know, to make it happen on October 1st. But whether she signs it or not, it's likely to happen on October 1st. If she was going to veto it, all of my sources say she would have let the Democratic leadership know she was going to veto it out of courtesy. It would just be really like rude and like a slap in their face to veto it at this point. So we can expect it to become law. Hopefully she'll sign it. So we'll have the latest information on that as October 1st comes online. The Oregon Rules Advisory Committee for the OLCC come with the rules for the rec system. Those rules have to be finalized by November 1st. So by the middle of September, we'll have a great idea on the vast majority of the rules that are going to be in place. So with the medical rules, the rec rules, with Congressman Earl Blumenauer being there for the latest in federal law changes and reforms, it's really a great time and a great moment to come to the conference, network, learn about the latest in the business, and to also learn how you can best be involved to protect Oregon's marijuana laws. And that's really, I think, the thing that separates the OMMBC from other conferences, is that at our core, we're advocates, and we feature longtime advocates like Attorney Leland Berger and Paul Loney. These are not fly-by-the-night cannabis attorneys and lobbyists who are only around when there's money to be made. These are people who were fighting for this 30 years ago, working to put themselves out of business, and now they're the more knowledgeable than anybody. And I think it's great that we really combine activism with the business structure. And like Alex said, this is our grittiest kind of business. So you want to be a wholesaler, retailer, processor, producer, all of the above. You want to be medical, you want to be rec, you want to do both. We're going to have all that for you, but we're also going to say and give opinions and let people know how you can be involved, how you can stay involved to not only protect what's good for business. We are business people and entrepreneurs, but we strike a balance between business and what's best for patients and consumers and all around. And so I think it's the best conference as far as marijuana conferences go when you want to get involved in business. And it's something that I'm really proud of. And I think people gain a lot from it.
Yeah, I think so too. OMMBC, is it .com that they can find that? OMMBC.com, you can find out, you can register. You usually do like an early bird price. Is that too late for that? Or is
early bird's going to go on for the next few weeks. It's $2.99 right now, and it's a two-day event. And that also comes with our big parties
at night
also, where we mix it up a little bit.
I remember half of them. But it's always a good time. And folks, when you're talking about these conferences, sometimes people will see a price on that, and they'll go, oh my God. But here's the thing. It's like what you get in the sit-down panels, the information you're getting, not only is that worth the money, but then these networking opportunities, they're priceless. I can't tell you. I mean, I wouldn't be here today if not for networking and meeting people. And this is where the big thing's happening. And you're right now at the very beginning of this wave, of this Green Rush wave happening in Oregon. This would be the time to go to the OMMBC. We're going to do it.
We're gonna do it. Yeah, no, it's an exciting time to be in Oregon right now, and the OMMBC just always kind of encapsulate the vibe of what's happening currently in Oregon. So we're looking forward to this. There's a good chance the event's going to sell out. We have limited capacity at the Hilton because we picked the speaker room that we thought was actually the most beautiful. It has windows, and it's just a great space. So we're limited to about 750 people at this conference, so we're pretty much guaranteed to sell out. So do encourage people to definitely get your ticket before it could be sold out as early as the first week in September.
Wow. And we're speaking with Alex Rogers, who's the head of the OMMBC and the International CBC, these conferences he's been putting on now. Fourth annual now. This is amazing. Anthony Johnson's here from New Approach Oregon. And I know at the previous conferences, you've always had great keynote speakers. Andrew Sullivan said one of your conferences was the best conference ever, I think was his quote. You mentioned Congressman Blumenauer. Any other luminaries we should let people know are going to be there?
Anthony?
Judge James Gray.
Oh!
Coming in from California. Yeah. You know, it was great to bring in Judge Gray to cannabis law reform activism, a longtime judge in California who's written books. He was the vice presidential candidate on the Libertarian ticket with Gary Johnson. And now he's an entrepreneur as a board member for Cannabis Indica, Cannabis Sativa Incorporated. So Judge Gray's delivering the keynote the first day, Earl Blumenauer the second day. And then for the most part, you know, we have brought in people from California, but it's a very much Oregon medical marijuana and recreational marijuana focused. To back up your point about the price, another thing about the price, if you wanted to hire an attorney and ask them questions, I mean, attorneys charge these days, you know, $300 an hour. Mm-hmm. And to have Lee Berger, Paul Loney, and we're bringing in Wykowski from California.
Oh, great.
You know, the top tax expert, Henry Wykowski, the top tax expert in the country. His cases have determined what can be deducted under federal IRS law. And so he's at the forefront of that. And to be able to ask questions of him for $2.99 is really invaluable and really worth the money. And like you said, the networking opportunities, so much. You can be the smartest person in the world, the greatest person in the world, but if nobody knows about you, it's hard to make it in this business world. And the market's saturated, so a lot of it's who you know. So we have a good time, but we do provide the great, really great information, and it's really focused to succeed, to help people succeed in this Oregon market.
We're looking forward to it. Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference, OMMBC.com, September 14th and 15th.
12th and 13th.
12th and 13th. Who's 14th and 15th? I keep thinking of? Oh, it's Seattle Hemp Fest is 14th and 15th. That's been on my mind lately. Sorry about that. 12th and 13th. Got it?
That's right.
Of September. OMMBC.com. Alex Rogers and Anthony Johnson here in the studio. And we're coming up on the end of the hour, but I had some questions about the licensing. I said, can you stay for a sec?
I can stay.
Okay, just about 5 minutes in the next hour there. But before we go, Alex, if people want to get in touch with you, is there like Facebooks and other things we should tell them about?
Yeah, you just go to the OMMBC website, OMMBC.com, and then just you can hit us right up on our website. And we respond generally within about 24 hours to anybody hitting us up. So we still have about four, five exhibitor booths left. So if anyone's interested in exhibiting, Those will be gone definitely in a couple weeks. Otherwise, just hit us up at the website. Have any questions, we'll get back to you.
All right, OMMBC.com, and I'll see you there. For everyone here at Rolla J Studios in beautiful legal Potland, Oregon, I'm Radical Russ, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you